You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
Hi, I'm Margie Nomura, and welcome to the Desert Island Dishes podcast. This is the podcast where every week I ask my guests to choose their 7 Desert Island dishes. These range from finding out about the dish that most reminds them of their childhood, the best dish they've ever eaten, and of course, the last dish they would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island. I hope you're all well and that you've had a lovely week. If you haven't yet left a 5-star rating, now is your moment. It makes such a difference, and I really love reading your reviews. This was the first episode we've recorded at my house. Chetna came over armed with Portuguese custard tarts, which are the way to my heart, and we drank tea from teacups, very sophisticated, and nibbled on brownies and custard tarts as we chatted with the spring sunshine pouring through the window. I think it's always nice to set the scene a little bit, isn't it? So I hope you enjoyed today's episode. My guest today is Chetna Makan. You may remember Chetna from the Great British Bake Off season 5, where she made it through to the semi-finals and really stood out for her exciting use of flavor, creativity, and lovely personality. She's gone on to write 3 cookbooks, all showcasing the food of India in different and exciting ways. She's had her own successful YouTube channel, Food with Chetna, where she shares her love of cooking, all inspired by Indian cuisine. Chetna says, many people still think of Indian food as unhealthy takeaways or elaborate, tedious recipes to prepare. I want to show that everyday Indian food, as I cook in my own kitchen, can be extremely delicious while being easy to prepare and healthy. Welcome, Chetna.
Thank you.
So nice to have you on Desert Island Dishes. You've just published your 3rd cookbook, which is amazing because your series of Bake Off was only in 2014. So that's quite a lot of books in a relatively short space of time.
Well, now hearing you say it like that, it seems like a short span of time. But actually, it seems like I've worked on these books for so long. Each one of them, you know, it took a whole year to kind of get produced, written, and photographed and all that stuff. So yeah, in that sense, it doesn't seem long at all.
Yeah, I guess looking back on Bake Off, it must be one of those things where it kind of feels like yesterday, but then also a really long time ago because so much has happened.
I think it used to feel like yesterday, but I don't know what's happened. Like suddenly I feel like every time I think about Bake Off, it feels like it was forever ago, but I guess it has been 4+ years. Maybe it's the 5th year. So it's been a long time now. So
yeah.
It's fair that it feels, in the past.
Yeah. And so you grew up in India, in Jabalpur, an ancient city in the state of, and I know I'm going to completely mispronounce this, but the state of Madhya Pradesh.
Wow, you're good.
So let's get straight into the first desert island dish. And that's the dish that most reminds you of your childhood.
The dish that reminds me of childhood could be anything, God, anything that my mum prepares or It is just so many dishes. How do you pick one?
No, it is. I feel bad asking the questions because it is so difficult.
Yeah, it is like.
But you can give us a few. So, what kind of thing was your mom cooking when you were growing up?
She would make these aloo parathas, which were just potato stuffed flatbreads, which was amazing. Her rajma rice, which is red kidney beans, is just, it reminds me of Sunday afternoons where we would have a massive bowl of rajma and a rice and we would just share and, you know, eat together. And we always ate at the dining table together. That is, I guess, one of the dishes. But on the Sunday mornings, my dad would go out and get samosas and jalebis. And it was a combination which we had for breakfast on a weekend. And he would go at the time when they were freshly made so that we get it nice and hot. And those are actually the best samosas I've had in my life. I've still not had samosas better than those.
Ooh.
And then that would be followed by jalebis, which are the sweet, deep-fried kind of donut-y stuff, which is then soaked in sugar.
Ooh, yum.
And that would be what I remember eating together as a family.
Oh, that sounds so nice. Your mom sounds like she was an amazing cook and yes. She was sort of cooking three meals a day from scratch.
Yes.
And in your book, you talk about how she would buy ingredients from the street vendor and what she was making that day, which is completely dictated by the ingredients she could find.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And just to tell you that the street vendor still comes to this date. Obviously, it's a different one,
yes.
But the street vendors still walk into the, you know, area where they live, and she still picks up whatever he's brought. So that day's dish is dependent on what he has on his kind of cart.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I love it. Like yeah. How...
It's the best kind of cooking.
It is the best kind of cooking also because it's all very seasonal.
Yeah.
Completely seasonal. So if there's been too much rain and there hasn't been, lots of coriander, and coriander is suddenly expensive, so she will buy only little, or onions are very expensive. So it all depends on, it's completely seasonal,
yes.
Which I think is amazing, which obviously we don't do nowadays, do we?
No, it's amazing. And I think it also really pushes you to be creative as a cook, which is such an exciting way of cooking. And I guess seeing that from a young age, it kind of helps you to become an intuitive cook, which
yes.
is really fun, isn't it?
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about growing up in India, because it must be really interesting now that you have your own children. I know that you live in Kent and that's where they've spent their childhood. How do you think their experience compares to yours growing up?
I think the experiences obviously are different, but that could not necessarily be because I was born and brought up in India and they were born and brought up here. I think it could also be how times have changed in India as well. So if they were born in India today, I see my niece and nephew who live in India, they obviously are not experiencing what we did as yeah. children, you know. There's no cart at my sister's house bringing vegetables. They go to a mall and buy all the vegetables from the shop. So
yeah.
I think it's just the different generation experiences. But obviously, living where we do, I do try and keep it as similar to what I had growing up. Example, cooking from scratch, making meals fresh, and going to my local farm shop to buy my fruit and veg. So I'm trying to keep it very similar for yeah. the kids. Yeah.
Yeah. So to keep those basic experiences the same.
Yes.
But you're so right. Like times have changed globally across
yes,
the world.
Absolutely.
Like, you can't compare the two. But it must be interesting having cousins in different countries.
Yes, it is quite interesting because I've got another couple of nieces who live in the US right now. So yes, it is quite nice to see how different they are all being brought up because we all live in different countries.
Yeah, and even with the ones in America, like everyone's going to have different accents.
Yes.
It's so fun. So you were born in Jabalpur and then you moved to Mumbai when you were about 17 to go to college and then became a fashion designer. So I looked it up on the map and that's quite a sizable distance, and 17 is still really young. Is that the norm to travel and move away at that age, or were you doing something quite brave when you did that?
Actually, it isn't the norm. It wasn't the norm. It is the norm now, but okay. It wasn't the norm. God, 20 years ago. Goodness, it's scary. But it wasn't the norm. And when I did leave home at such a young age, I was kind of one of the only ones in my whole friend circle. None of them had left. Everyone was doing their university where we used to live. So yes, it was very unusual and quite bold step. Yeah.
Yeah. And did you do that because you had your sights set on being a fashion designer and Mumbai was where you had to go? Or did you just sort of have itchy feet and you knew that you needed to fly the nest?
No, I would have done fashion if there was a college where I lived. It okay. wasn't that at all. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. There were no ifs and buts. I think I was 17 when I left, but I think 3-4 years before that, I had made up my mind. I wanted to do fashion and I had looked up and that was one of the best colleges in the country at that time. And, you know, that's how I landed up. So it wasn't very easy to get into the college as well. I had to go and give entrance exam. Then I had interviews. So it wasn't a straightforward fill the form, you're done.
Yeah.
It was quite, you know, it was my first interview of my life and I still remember kind of waiting in the area outside the office where all these very, very smartly dressed, fashionably dressed teenagers were there waiting to give the interview. And I was wearing in very Indian attire, which that teacher remembers still now.
Know,
that I was the only one in a very traditional attire.
When everyone else was trying to be like really fashion-y.
Yeah, jeans and shirts. And I used to wear, it's not that, but I don't know why that day I really wanted to be traditionally dressed. So
yeah, well, it obviously worked. You got in. And with India being such an enormous country, do people tend to sort of travel around and visit different areas? Like, would you go on holiday to a different region or is it more localized than that?
I think, again, times have changed. Yeah. When we were little, for our summer holidays, we would just go to our grand's house who lived 2 hours away. So we would take a train, get there, spend the whole month there with our cousins. They all lived in a joint family. So there were loads of cousins our age. And it used to be the best times, absolutely the most amazing memories. And you know, people who could afford holidays would go away. But my dad's was a professor and he's retired now. But so we couldn't really afford big holidays. So we would just go to our grandma's house and have a fantastic family time.
Amazing. Let's talk about the second desert island dish. And that's the first dish that you learned to cook.
Now, there are loads. And maybe let's blame it on my memory because I can't remember what I learned to cook first. I do remember kind of what my job sometimes used to be, that mom would be outside doing something and she would say, go and stir the onions. And I would go and stir the onions. And she would say, which is why I remember it, she'd say, only go and add the tomatoes to the onions. Only add it if they are deep golden brown. And I remember getting told off because a few times where I thought they were golden brown, but they were obviously clearly not golden brown enough for her. And I've added the tomatoes, which is why I never add tomatoes to my onions unless they are deep golden brown, because I learned my lesson. I was told off too many times.
I mean, yeah, that's a big responsibility though, but I guess that is the kind of lesson that stays with you for life.
Exactly. But I guess, you know, the earlier dishes would be probably some kind of dal, I would imagine. So, but I can't particularly pin one particular recipe that I learned.
So does that mean that you were just sort of cooking throughout your childhood and just sort of, you know, you're always helping in the kitchen and it was just part of growing up?
So no, I didn't really cook throughout my childhood, but I would help.
Yeah.
And I was very particular because when I would think, oh, I want to learn how she made this. And if I was cooking that day, for example, and she'll come and add something to it, I would get really upset because for me, the whole thing should have been made by me.
Okay.
How could she add the spice? I was supposed to do that. So I think that was one thing which I remember very, very clearly. But no, I didn't cook much when I was living there because I started kind of cooking when I left home. And initially I was obviously in the you know, many years I lived in Mumbai. I can't even remember, 7-8 years. I moved a lot from one house to another rented place and shared with friends or all sorts. I was a paying guest at one point. So the availability of kitchen varied.
Okay.
Which is why my cooking varied. So sometimes I had the kitchen to myself. Sometimes I had to share it. So things like that. So yes, I was, which is why I was cooking a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And something that I learned through researching you was that you said, although sweets are really popular in India, most of the cooking is done on a stovetop and not in an oven. But your mum did actually have a portable oven and she would bake you birthday cakes.
Yes.
But that's so interesting, isn't it? So do most people in India have, presumably they have ovens now? Have times changed? Or not, is it still stovetops the focus?
Stovetops are still the focus. Obviously, there are more ovens now, but depends on the household. So some households have oven because they are the younger generation wanting to try. Like my sister has an oven. All my kind of cousins my age have ovens. But I guess a lot of my mom's friends still don't have ovens.
Because they're not interested in eating cake.
Yes.
So you don't need... Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? And it sounds so silly, but I hadn't really thought about that because you just kind of think of a kitchen as being a kitchen and you don't realize the nuances between kitchens in different countries.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And so you met your husband who was studying medicine in India and then together you moved to the UK and settled in Kent. How did that move come about and how did you feel about it?
Well, it was completely my husband's fault. So we were both studying and we met when we were both in our colleges and so we were together many years and then started working once we finished our studies. And I was actually doing lots of things. So I was styling for a magazine. I was heading a design department in a company. I just started my own label, which I was supplying to stores.
Crazy. It was all kicking off.
It was all kicking off. And then I designed for a couple of Bollywood films, clothes. And it was just, I was kind of doing everything. And I was, I've always been really ambitious and things changed. But at that time, I was really, really ambitious. So I wanted to do it all. And I had the passion and the drive. So yes, I was doing it all. But then he decided that, you know, at that age when some of his friends were coming to UK for studies and he thought, oh, why don't I go? We didn't really sit down and think. He told me and we didn't really think if he goes then I'll have to go. Didn't think for a second, seriously. Why don't you go and, you know, try and do your further studies there. And that's it. It was literally overnight. He entered and then a week later he had to come here.
Oh my goodness. And you came with him?
Not straight away.
Okay.
So he was here for a year trying to get, you know, a place in the department he wanted. And then a year later he got the place and then that's when I joined him.
Okay. And had you been to the UK before that?
Yes. So I had been to London.
Yes.
Not to the small sleepy town where we live now. Okay. So it was a bit of a shock.
Yeah, a bit of a culture shock. Because yeah.
London was amazing.
Well, yeah. And you moved from one of the most densely populated cities in the world to Broadstairs.
Absolutely. It was a big shock. And I did give my husband 6 months.
Yep.
I said to him, I moved on 7th November. I'm not good with memory, but I remember that date. We moved, we flew on 7th November, came to Broadstairs and he told me it was a seaside town. So it was dark at night. We arrived and I said, where's the sea? And he was like telling me in one direction, that's where the sea is. But it was lovely, but it was so cold and things have changed in Broadstairs in the 14, 15 years I've been there. But at that time, the shops would close at 5. There was no big supermarket. It was very depressing because I wanted a cake for my birthday, which was in December and it just a month after. And I ordered a cake in the local bakery. I will never forget that. And I was so excited because I always have loved cake. So I went to collect it. And I don't remember ordering that, but she made me a fruit cake. And I hate, Christmas cake. Fruit cake is not my thing. And I came home and I cried and I was like, oh my God. So I gave my husband 6 months. I said, 6 months, we move to a bigger place or whatever. Just move from here. But then June, July came and I just fell in love with the place. Yeah. And now he can't make me move anywhere.
It's really strange when you arrive somewhere in the dark, isn't it? Because you just can't picture it. And you're sort of trying to imagine it based on like what you can smell and hear. Then you wake up in the morning and it's just totally not what you imagined at all. Let's talk about the third desert island dish. And that's the best dish you've ever eaten.
So as you would imagine, it wouldn't be easy to answer this. But then I sat down and I thought, what's the taste I want to go back and eat again? And maybe 3-4 years ago, we went to Amritsar to see Golden Temple. Somebody said to me, actually, the taxi driver there said, I said, oh, where can I get? Because obviously it's North India, it's Punjab, and they're famous for their curries and mostly chicken curries and naans and stuff. I'm going to get really hungry after this. And then he said, oh, if you want that, go to this certain place. I can't remember the name of the place. It's a restaurant and like a restaurant dhaba, you know, small cafe restaurants in India. So we went there and that's the best butter chicken I've ever had. Oh my God. The sauce was like onion tomato-y, but it wasn't too tomato-y. It had like a kick to it, but it was just the right amount of creaminess and the chicken was moist and just cooked through and then it was soaked in the gravy. Oh my goodness. If I could go back just to fly to Amritsar just to eat that, it would be worth it. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
That's how good it was.
And you just came across it by chance.
By chance. That's so fun.
I feel like loads of the stories that we hear are things like that, which just shows sometimes do as much research as you can, but actually you just have to go with like local recommendations. Absolutely. And just risk it, don't you?
We wouldn't have found that because it wasn't, you know, a restaurant on the middle of somewhere in the market. It was a bit outside and oh, amazing. Oh,
that sounds amazing. Okay, so it was having children that really ignited your passion and interest in baking. Tell us how you came to apply for Bake Off.
So I was a fan of the show. I remember my daughter going to school, just starting school or was it nursery? And we were watching the show and at drop off, we would talk to like my friends and me would say, oh, did you watch it last night? And do you think the right person went? And I remember it was France's show who was the year before us. And I remember talking about it and my friends had a different favorite to myself and we both wanted like the 3-4 of us wanted different people to win, which was quite interesting. Yeah. So I was watching it like a big fan. And then the show ended and, you know, they show an advert after that, oh, apply for the next series. So my friend said, oh, you must apply. And I thought for a second and I thought, you know, I don't even like bake. Like only thing I baked was cakes.
Yeah.
Never had made puff pastry or you know, hot water crust pastry.
And but not only not made them, you hadn't grown up eating
not at all.
Such a big challenge.
Shoe pastry, just not at all. So I thought, you know what, worst come to, obviously, I wasn't even thinking that I will get through. I thought, you know, just it has to literally be sent. So I filled in the form and my husband came from work and I said, oh, I filled in the form. Just have a like double check. And, you know, it's best for someone else to see if there's something wrong. And just then I'll press send. And then he looked at it and he said, are you sure you want to do this? Because, you know, because the reason being that for both of us, we thought that maybe you will not get selected. Maybe the people they know will get selected or, you know, it's a very close group.
Yeah.
They won't take outsiders. And either of us don't know anyone who has done anything like this ever in our families or friends. Never. We just don't know anybody. So we thought it won't happen. And I said, I know what you mean, but let's just send it anyway.
Yeah,
and that's it.
Nothing to lose. And you've got to be in it to win it.
Yeah. But and that's it. And then a week later, I got the phone call.
What? So wait, the phone call saying that you could come for an interview?
Yes.
And then did you have to take along something that you did?
Yeah. So the phone interview was first. I thought that was represent my baking. I don't know why. But anyways, I took lemon meringue pie. Lemon meringue tart? Yeah. And yeah, I don't know why I chose it, but I love that eating that, making that. So I guess that's why I must have taken it. Yeah. And I remember, for the savory, because I didn't really make bread at that time. I took some stuffed naans, if I'm not wrong. Yeah.
It must feel like there's quite a lot riding on that one dish. Like you're sort of putting all of your hopes on that one thing.
Yeah. I think it was the case. I think for me, it was the case, but I don't think the selectors on the other side were thinking, oh, it'll all depend on what she's brought. It wasn't like that at all.
You hope they're sort of looking at wider, wider things. And I always think the hardest part must be keeping it all a secret whilst you're filming it, because you can't really tell other people.
No. And actually, that was quite hard. Keeping a secret, I was part of it. Once people knew I was part of it, nobody really wanted to know who won it, because they didn't want me to spoil their surprise or their, you know, they wanted to watch it. So that was easy. But yes, to not tell them that I was part of that show was actually really hard. A couple of my really close friends knew.
Okay, because they were maybe the ones that encouraged you to join.
And also I think I needed a lot of help with my kids, because they were really little. It was a juggle.
Either admitting to them you're on Bake Off, or maybe they thought you sort of had some secret life that they didn't know about.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the fourth desert island dish. And that's your favorite sandwich.
So this was actually quite easy.
Okay.
For a change. And it is my toasted Bombay, but you know, toasted sandwich, which is, it's just white bread always. And it's got green coriander chutney, a layer of cucumber, a layer of tomatoes, some cooked beetroot, and then a masala, like a spiced up boiled potatoes, like a spiced mashed potato.
Okay.
And that is toasted in a toasty.
Yum.
Oh my God. It's so
good. But when you were introducing that sandwich, you said it in a very casual way, like it was nothing. But I mean, that sounds like an amazing sandwich.
Oh, it is. Once you have it, it is just the best Bombay toast sandwich.
And is that something that we can all find in lots of different places, or is that a Chetna special?
Oh no, it's not my make. It's the most popular, one of the most popular street foods in Mumbai.
Okay.
It's a specifically Mumbai.
Okay.
Which I think obviously used to be really popular just in Mumbai, but like everything in the world right now, it just spread. And you can now find it in different parts of India, but also in restaurants and cafes over the world.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it is just so easy as well, but it's just the so many layers.
Yeah. So is that something that you would make at home, or is it, it's a bit of a faff to make it yourself?
It's not a faff at all. I actually put the recipe in my second book, because you cannot go to Mumbai and not see it being made, because it is literally in your face everywhere.
God, it sounds amazing. Mm. So talking of your books, let's talk a bit more about them. It's amazing that you've written three. I have the latest one in my hands right now, Chetna's Healthy Indian. And I wanted to ask you about that, but I really love the idea of your second one, which is all about Indian street food. You talk about how every corner of India has its own food, and it's kind of impossible to generalize because it's all so varied. Do you think in some ways India is quite unique in that respect?
Well, I would like to say that. But at the same time, I have traveled a fair bit, but not enough to kind of make a sure claim.
I won't hold you to it.
Yes, exactly. But I do think that with Indian food, I think it is unique in the sense that even if you like Madhya Pradesh, where I was born, if you think, oh, all of Madhya Pradesh will have that kind of food, it doesn't work like that. Mm. You could go to one town and there's slightly different stuff to what you find in another town. And obviously north, south, east, west is completely different. But if you just take west, for example, there is Gujarat, which is a different cuisine. And there's also Rajasthan, which is a completely different cuisine. So it can't even be divided into four. It's so much more. And stuff that I've not had, being born and brought up there, because for that you would have to travel. Mm. And you know, I've not really traveled all of India. It's like where you live, you just think, oh yeah, I'll do that one day, but actually you kind of just leave it. And then so I am traveling India more since I've left India, which
that's
is
so interesting.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
So every time we go back for a visit, we make sure that we see a new place which we have not visited before. And that means that the kids can now see India like, you know, places that we haven't seen either. So yeah,
that's amazing. And people do really rely on street food in India, don't they? Because you say in your book that some people really do have it three times a day. What are your favorites? I know that might be a difficult question, but where's the best street food you've had, and does a particular dish spring to mind?
I can't really choose a place where I get best, but I think Mumbai is kind of one of the best places for Indian street food. The reason being that with other places, like I found in Chennai, which obviously I had not been before, the way I did when I was researching the book, they haven't got, say, you know, Indian Chinese food being sold on the streets, or they didn't really have vada pav being sold on the streets. Whereas if you go to Mumbai, they will have the South Indian food being sold as well. So Mumbai is like London, where they are spoiled for choice. Like there's food from north, south. There's all sorts of cuisine available. So one of my favorites used to be vada pav, which is deep fried potato ball, which is, so you make mashed potatoes, then you dip it in gram flour and then deep fry it. And then you serve it in a bun, a soft roll, like you call it here. And it's got green chutney on one side, which is coriander mint chutney. And it's got spicy garlic chili chutney on one side. And it's the best thing. It's carb on carb. Yeah. But
you're speaking my language.
Oh, my God. But it is the most popular street food in Mumbai. And
what's it called?
It's called vada pav. So vada is the round ball and the pav is the bun in which it's served. And that is a proper Mumbai. You can find it in London, in restaurants.
Have you had a really good one?
Yes, in Dishoom.
Oh, is that the best?
Yes.
Dishoom's so good, isn't it?
The Dishoom vada pav is very close to street food vada you can find in Mumbai.
Ooh, that's a really good tip. Okay. And I love the idea of what you're doing with the latest one, because did you feel like it was an idea that you were coming across a fair bit, that people's perceptions of Indian food was unhealthy, or that they did sort of associate it solely with takeaways?
I can only speak about what I see around me.
Yeah.
And I did actually find that with the, you know, where I live with locals, and I thought for them it was takeaway. And that was all it was. Mm. And obviously people are now being introduced, and you can see more on TV or read more books, or, you know, internet, not just TV, just, you know, online. If you go on Netflix or anything like that, you can see all the food. So they are getting more and more, you know, knowledgeable or exposed to more Indian food. But for them, still basically Indian food means...
Yeah. And what do you think about anglicized Indian dishes that we have here? Are there any that you've come across that are authentic, or are there any that sort of particularly peeve you that we think are Indian and actually they're so far from authentic?
So I don't have there's no Indian restaurant where I live. And all the Indian so-called takeaways, none of them are Indian. They're either Bangladeshi or Nepalese or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And none of them, not a single dish is a genuine Indian dish, not a single one. And I have to be honest, I've never had a Madras or a Vindaloo. I've just never had it, because if I have been to ages ago to a place where for a takeaway, actually I haven't had a takeaway from where I live. I love coming to London. One of the reasons is there's such good Indian food in London. You guys are so spoiled for that.
Yeah, we are so spoiled.
But yeah, locally, what I can find, there's not even a single, other than the naan, there's nothing that's genuine.
And do you think, but they would say, they would feel like what they were producing was sort of Indian food?
Yeah, I think so. They would say, but... yeah, I've not actually never gone there, and I questioned them.
It's the same thing. I had it when I went to China when I finished school. I just remember being so surprised that what I thought of as Chinese food is so different. Even if over there it has the same name as what we're calling it over here, which is completely different. And it just, I mean, it sounds so silly, but it just blew my mind that, you know, it's so arrogant,
yeah,
as an English person, that that's what you think. Let's talk about the fifth desert island dish. And that's the dish you eat the most often.
The most often, the dish that I cook every single week is tadka dal.
Oh, yes.
Almost, if I'm working from home on a Monday, the first thing I cook on a Monday is tadka dal, because I don't know why. I think maybe because you kind of overindulge on weekends.
Yeah.
And you know, kids are back to school, you know, my husband's off to work. And if I'm working from home, then it just kind of, it's like I'm...
Like in a nice routine.
Yeah, it's like I wouldn't have to think. I'll just take the pressure cooker out, put some lentils in. It's just kind... it just automatically kind of happens.
You're on autopilot.
Yeah, autopilot. That's it with tadka dal. It's a Monday, tadka dal.
And I'm interested that you do it in the pressure cooker.
Yes.
Okay, so is that a Chetna secret?
No, it's just that's how we cook in India.
Okay.
We cook lentils and, you know, chickpeas and things like that, all in pressure cooker. That's how it's cooked. So,
okay. So what is your secret to a really great tadka dal?
I think the tadka, which is the tempering, is the secret to a good tadka dal, because you could have any sort of dal as a base. I usually use tur, which is, they've got all sorts of names for it. You can have the base of the lentils to be anything. So it could be yellow, it could be the red lentils you cook, or the stuff you can find in supermarkets, because not all lentils are available in common supermarkets. So I usually cook tur, and it's just that you cook the dal, which is simple. You put some salt and turmeric and that's done. But it's the tempering, which has to be, if it's ghee, it tastes even better. And then you have some cumin, onions, garlic, tomatoes, and lots of coriander. And then you cook it and put it on the dal. And then you mix it and becomes tadka dal.
Ah, so good.
It is quite so simple. Good. So simple. So healthy.
Yeah.
And it's actually really quick to make.
Once you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that brings us on nicely. I like to ask people sort of about their desert island ingredients, but I thought maybe we should focus on spices. What are your sort of top five desert island spices that sort of maybe everyone should think about having in their kitchen?
So we, most Indian kitchens have a spice dabba,
okay,
which is a spice box. It's a stainless steel spice box.
Yeah.
And you have seven, most of them have seven little containers in them. The middle one is always the salt, because that's used the most.
Okay.
One is chili powder, then is turmeric powder, then it's cumin seeds, black mustard seeds, then you've got ground coriander powder, and then you've got garam masala.
Okay, cool. Yeah. That's a good selection.
That is a good selection. And if you ask me one thing, if I had to go somewhere for a week and I had to cook for myself, then I would just grab that dabba and take it, because I can make any dish with just those spices. I don't need any other whole spices, nothing. But that is the basic. If you have that in your house, then you can have delicious food anytime.
Yeah. Knowing that you have that, you could just transform anything into something really special. Okay, that's a really good tip. We're on to the sixth desert island dish, and that's your go-to dinner party dish.
One of the things which I tend to always make, it could be a different one, but I do always have a chicken curry.
Ooh.
Always have a chicken curry. It could be a coriander chicken curry. It could be a Punjabi, my mom's style chicken curry, or it could be just a tomato-based chicken curry, but a chicken curry.
Okay. And is that because you get most of it done ahead of time, or is it just because everybody loves chicken curry?
Everybody loves chicken curry. Also, if I can make it in the morning for the dinner, then it sits in the sauces and the spices and it's delicious by the time we actually sit to eat. So for various reasons, it is something the kids like and the grown-ups like. So if I'm having a dinner party, sometimes the kids are invited too. So it ticks all the boxes.
Yeah, perfect. That's what we're looking for. And then do you make a pudding?
Always a pudding.
There's obviously
always a pudding.
What would you make?
Well, one of the things I like to make is actually it could be a chocolate. I would prefer to make a cake, but sometimes it depends on the season as well, because in the winters, you don't really want just a slice of cake. You want something like warming. And yeah, it could be, I love making profiteroles. It's one of my, you know, one of my top things to make. And just if you fill it with cream, fresh cream.
So good.
And just some chocolate sauce on top. Oh,
yeah. And they feel like such a treat, don't they?
They do. But actually, once you, if you kind of make them often, then you can literally just whip them up quite quickly. So it's not.
Yeah. People get really scared of choux pastry, but it is just a matter of practicing. And
it actually is.
I find it's easier than other kinds of pastry.
I think it's easier than other pastries. So. Oh, I love a good tart. I absolutely love tarts. Chocolate or, you know, but I find sometimes it's a faff, like then, you know, blind bake it or whatever. But with the profiteroles done in the oven.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you on the same page. So on Desert Island Dishes, we have a cookbook corner. So I wondered, what is your most treasured cookbook?
Oh, I'm going to be really controversial, aren't I? So
what is it?
Actually, there isn't one.
Okay, that's fine. Have you got a few?
No. I don't have one particular one, which I just like go to every time, because there are quite a few. Like over the years since working in food, I have collected quite nice, some really nice food books, cookbooks. And I could make one dish from something and I might pick up something else from the other dish. But there's not one that if you actually take away one, I wouldn't miss it. Like, like I wouldn't like think, oh, where's that gone?
So do you have quite a serious collection?
Not an extremely serious collection, but a decent collection.
Yes. Like how many are we talking?
Oh, I don't know. I've never counted. That's something I need to do when I get home.
I'm imagining if you haven't counted it, sort of we're into the hundreds.
Oh, God. No, I don't think. Is it 100? Maybe 100. Maybe, I don't know.
It's a good collection. We're on to the final seventh desert island dish. And that's the last dish you would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island.
This is the actually most difficult one.
You can have several courses.
I would love that samosa I was talking about from my from Jabalpur. Oh my goodness, now I suddenly want it.
I feel like you're gonna go straight from here to the airport and we'll see you.
Just oh my goodness, that samosa is the best. So I would love a samosa. I would love the butter chicken I eat in Amritsar. Some biryani on the side, and maybe a lemon meringue pie or a jalebi or something. I don't know. Yeah, but the samosa. Yes, definitely.
So a meal mainly centered around the samosa. Just have a whole buffet of samosas. I think that would be delicious. Shatna, those are your desert island dishes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I only went to India last year on my honeymoon, but already I feel like I need to go back. There's so much more to discover. If you're listening and you haven't yet left a review, please do, as it really does give the show a little boost and you will genuinely make my day. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget you can visit the website, desertislanddishes.co, for all the recipes, lots of kitchen tips and tricks, and you can find me on Instagram at Margie Nomura. Bye.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.